turnpike's been widened pretty much.
Well, and I think the reality is, too, is that we were also talking about this, is that the congestion's not that bad, relatively speaking.
Really.
You know, because someone asked us today, like, well, did the federal, you know, did the feds give us sort of a mandate, hey, this is the level you need to be in? And it's like, well, when I-495 in D.C., you know, is operating, you know, at a level that none of our roads would have ever been at. No thanks. You know, our threshold for congestion is probably a lot lower than their threshold for congestion because, you know, we stop for 5 minutes and we get upset. That's good free flow traffic in D.C.
Yeah.
So, so we're talking about that for, that work product as well. Yeah, so now you all have your agendas in front of you. But what we'll do is we'll go, you know, Carrie, do you want a few minutes? We could do Dave's presentation first, and then you can do your 3P.
I'll do whatever the crowd wants me to do. If Dave wants to go first, that's fine.
You want
to
jump first,
yeah.
Dave,
yeah.
Talk safety, and then we'll do the public participation plan?
Sure.
Santa Claus is listening.
But today I'm going to present our 2015-2017 crash report. Some of the things I'm going to touch on is trends, looking at crash trends, high crash sections and intersections, bicycle and pedestrian safety, safety performance measures, which is a new federal requirement that we have now, and then I'll touch on the ODOT safety program. Looking at just the raw number of crashes, in 2017, we had a few more crashes. The red line up there, and I don't have my pointer, so I feel completely lost without my pointer. But anyhow, the red line up there is vehicle miles traveled. That I get that information from ODOT for
our area.
Here's
your pointer.
Pardon me?
Here's your pointer.
Oh, you have one. Oh my goodness! Thank you. Thank you.
You almost took my eye out.
Yeah, right. Wow.
don't point at
it. I hope I don't burn a hole in the screen.
Don't burn a hole in the screen. Keep it moving.
But anyhow, this line, wow, that is really bright. This line up here is vehicle miles traveled. That kind of gives us an idea of how much traffic is out there. And I don't know why there's this little dip in 16, but once again, I get it from ODOT. It's kind of ironic. There's a dip in vehicle miles traveled and a little dip in crashes. But overall, it's been staying nearly the same each year. If you would take the raw number of crashes and apply a trend line kind of shows you what's happening over a long period of time. The trend line would be nearly flat. It would be increasing just a hair. So, crashes are going up a little bit, but ever so slightly. The next thing I want to talk about is injury crashes and injuries. I'm going to try to look more in this report and in future reports. I want to kind of look at crashes and then injuries and fatalities, because a crash is one event, but from one event, from one crash, you can have multiple injuries or multiple fatalities. Just this week, there was an incident in Goodyear Heights where one vehicle was in a crash, one event. The crash was one event, but unfortunately, four people were killed. So, looking at crashes, we're kind of heading in the right direction. Both injury crashes and injuries have declined a little bit. When you take the injuries and look at them closer, when you just look at the serious injuries, once again, we're kind of heading in the right direction. They have also declined. But unfortunately, with fatal crashes and fatalities, we're not heading in the right direction. We had a couple more fatal crashes and, unfortunately, six more fatalities. And in 2017, we had, unfortunately, it was a bad year for this region, but also for the state and, I think, nationwide for fatalities. We had a total of 60 fatalities, 51 crashes, 60 fatalities. So there were some crashes, obviously, that had multiple fatalities, like the one this week.
Hey, Dave. Sorry. Yes. What was the ADT in 2014?
Huh?
Well, 2014 was, if you go back, I'm sorry, yeah, the
EMT. The first one?
Yeah, I just wanted to see, I was wondering about that. So, I mean,
so the rates could be the same for those.
Right, I mean, it's really the same. Well, I just fascinated that there were only 40 fatalities, and we're now up to 60, but the estimated ADT is within, or VMT is within 60 million, or, you know, so that's...
Once
part of me wonders what was good about 14 that, you know... I noticed that earlier, and I wanted to take a look at it.
This looks at everything that happens on in the two counties, interstates and everything, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. Now, we do take out, I should have mentioned, we do take out animal crashes, and we take out construction zone crashes because with animal crashes, there's nothing really we can do to the roads to improve those. I mean... maybe fencing, but I just
higher hunters.
There's not much you can do to prevent animal crashes, and with construction zone crashes, I'm not saying that they're not important. I mean, it's something that probably you know that we need to still be aware of.
Right.
But there's not much we can do to the roadway itself to prevent those in the future. I mean, that is kind of a temporary situation, and it's something that it kind of goes away on its own once that zone is taken down.
I was just wondering, you know, because you're looking at the big area and total number of miles traveled. If you were to forecast or compare that to number of employees, in other words, think of Youngstown right now, or Youngstown? Lordstown?
No. Lordstown.
Yeah. So there goes 2,000 jobs or something. So that's, in theory, 2,000 fewer drivers. And how the number of...
4,000 fewer trips.
Yeah. And basically, but again, the interstates, people come... We know so many vehicles come through us, interstate. They don't have anything to do with the local economy. Maybe a crash thing, say for Akron or Summit County drivers only in the crash report versus the number of people working. In other words, would there be a fluctuation based on the number of people working that would then require them to drive somewhere to get to a job?
Right, versus population.
Yeah, well, versus, yeah, population.
There's just so many. There's so many things that...
Different factors you can look at, yeah.
Yeah, there's so many things that tie into to crashes. You know, just because the thing is, though, just because somebody is not working, they're not going to a job at 7 in the morning and driving home at 4 in the afternoon. They still may be driving, though.
Yeah.
They still may be driving around looking for a job. They still may be...
Got to go grocery shopping.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's just...
Okay.
Man, it's hard to... It's just hard to...
I just wondered if that number... reflects something else going on in the community.
Which number? Do you mean this number or?
The total number of crashes. You know.
Oh, the total number of crashes. Weather plays into it.
Oh, yeah.
You have a bad winter with a lot of snow and ice. I think that plays into it. Yeah, it's just, there's just a lot of things but the last 3 years have been pretty stable. The same. So
I was thinking all this distracted driving, if that's going to be driving up number of crashes, whether they're whatever you call distracted drinking or texting or something else.
If I think a lot about this, and if I could sum it up in like in one phrase, I would say it is, I think people have lost the respect for driving. People have lost the respect for driving. People are just so always in a hurry. They're so careless. It's just so many careless drivers now that I think is partly what drives these numbers up. I mean, you see it every day almost.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When you're 16 and you're starting to drive, man, you keep both hands on the wheel and you look straight ahead and you don't think about anything else when you take those first couple trips, but then that wears off real quick, and then people start using phones, people start another big thing is drugs. We have a very bad opium. Ohio is one of the worst states for opium addiction. And, people are driving drugged up now. It used to be alcohol was the big thing. Now it's, it's drugs yeah. and alcohol. So it's just a whole number of things, I think, that play into
it. You also don't, you don't feel speed. Like, cars are made so well now. You can cruise at 75 miles per hour. You can still have a conversation. Road noise isn't loud.
Yeah, they're so quiet.
I mean, I just remember getting into an old Jeep one time, and it's like if you went over 60 miles an hour, you couldn't hear a damn thing. You couldn't hear a damn thing. The whole car is rattling.
Yeah, because many times you look down at your speedometer and you're
right,
going 80,
80.
And you don't even know it.
Yeah.
So it's there's just a whole lot of
factors.
Yeah.
To bring up what you were talking about, Dave, in terms of people being careless,
mm-hmm.
not worrying about that, you could sort of put that into what people are saying about the nation as a whole because of the lack of respect for all
respect.
The norms that we used to have.
Right? Exactly.
So you could almost put this into
a lack of respect for driving, a lack of respect for others on the road. I agree. Moving on to how we analyze the crashes, we get our crash data from ODOT. We download the data and we plot it in a GIS system using coordinates that are with the crash data. We do a lot of checking though. It's a tremendous amount of checking because a lot of these crashes are in the wrong locations, and then we have to figure out if they're intersection or non-intersection related, and we want to make sure it's right. I really want to make sure that if we analyze data that it's correct. Usually crashes within 250 feet of an intersection is considered intersection related, but not always, because you can have cars having accidents, like a single vehicle accident that's near an intersection, but in reality it really didn't have anything to do with the intersection. So we do a lot of checking, and then we sort out the segments and the intersections that meet our high crash criteria, which is 10 crashes per mile per year and a crash rate of 1 for segments. For intersections, it's 10 crashes and a crash rate of 1. So once we pull all those out, then we calculate a composite score. And a composite score is based on number of crashes. We give that a little more weight, 40%, a crash rate, which takes into account traffic, and a severity index which takes into account injuries. And then the composite score is how they're ranked. We rank them then by that composite score. There's 179 highway sections that met the minimum criteria. The number one section, and I think it was number one last year also, is State Route 59, East Main Street in Kent, right by the campus. It's just almost the perfect storm for accidents. You have a lot of young drivers, a lot of activity. I know that there were some streets closed over there. Summit Street was closed, so it even put more traffic on this street. And a lot of driveways on one side. You have the campus. The other side's a lot of driveways, in and out traffic. So I do know, though, that the Kent City Engineer is aware of this, and he's they're planning to do a study on how to improve things. Intersections, there were 316 intersections. What really was different this year about intersections is the number one and two ranked intersections were right next to each other in Akron. It was Rhodes, it was South Maple and Rhodes, and it was South Maple and Cedar. And one thing you can't see on this map is right, the zoo is actually over here. The Akron Zoo is over in this area. And the one thing you can't see is this. This is a pretty steep hill. And when I looked at the crash reports, it said there was a lot of red light running. So I'm not sure. Plus, there was construction in that area too. So I thought that was that's the first time those two have come up. They're always near the top, but that's the first time they've come up, one and two, right next to each other. We take a look at freeways, but we look at the work that ODOT does because they do the freeway analysis for the whole state. They divide them into urban and rural interstates. And in our area, there was, I think, 10 locations that made the top 50 statewide. And actually, there was one location that was seventh in the state, and that was State Route 8 up near Glenwood Boulevard. And I think there's a lot of crashes in that area because in the morning, coming southbound, that's where traffic starts to kind of slow down or stop. And there's a lot of rear-end crashes. I think Curtis kind of alluded to that. I think he was.
I've been hit there.
Well, that's a good way to do it.
I was rear-ended.
It's a good way to do investigation. Go out to the site.
So anyhow, moving on to bike and pedestrian crashes, some unique characteristics is they have lots of injuries. Bike and pedestrian injuries are 79% and 83%. There's just nothing to protect you if you are involved on a bike or as a pedestrian. They're more random and spread out. It's hard to come up with certain intersections or certain sections where they all happen, like with auto accidents. If you look at the maps, map 5-4 and 5-5, it shows how they're kind of spread out. If I could sum up one characteristic, it might be they're proportional to population. The more population that you have, the more bike and pedestrian accidents that you're liable to have. Many involve younger people, and it's probably education would be a very effective countermeasure with these types of crashes. Unfortunately, bike crashes jumped up a little bit. Not sure why. They're still not as high as they were back in like the 13 was a really bad year, and we're still well below that, but they did spike up a little bit from last year. Fortunately, the good news is there were no fatalities in 17. The latest thing with bike safety is the new 3-foot rule was enacted in 17, House Bill 154. This, I believe, is definitely a positive step in the right direction for bicycle safety. Bicycle crash trends, a lot of bicycle accidents happen at intersections, 66%. The most common crash is the bike. Many times a younger person on a bike doesn't obey stop signs or signals, and they go through an intersection and get hit by a car. And then oftentimes the bike actually hits the car. In this case, most of the time, a lot of the times, the bicyclist motorist is at fault. In this case, many times the bicyclist is at fault. And then the third most common crash at intersections is a vehicle turns in front of a bike. They're sometimes hard to see, very narrow profile, and motorists are not paying attention. They turn right in front of a bicyclist. The crashes that happen with bikes on segments is a lot of them happen at driveways. We had 19 happened with cars backing out or pulling in. Many times people are in a hurry. They quickly back out of their driveway. They look for traffic but don't realize a biker or pedestrian's there. And then the other two are hitting a bike from behind and then sideswiping a bike. So, especially with this one, this is where that 3-foot rule would definitely probably prevent a lot of these, would probably help prevent a lot of all of them really, but especially those two.
Would the CIC be out of order by recommending to the policy committee that every municipality require on all bikes flashing LED fore and aft for driver visibility?
Well,
I mean, you got to have a headlight on a motorcycle.
Exactly. You do on a car too.
And a car. So, right. But since bikes are small, a steady light wouldn't be that noticeable. But mm-hmm. a flashing LED front, fore and aft,
yeah,
would that reduce bikes? Would the
anything
makes
it
more visible?
Yeah,
anything, it would make it more visible.
Yeah, anything that increases visibility would help. I saw a bike yesterday that had a light on it so bright. It was unreal. I don't know what this new technology is.
They're LED lights, but they're very high powered ones.
It must have been. I mean, I thought it was an airplane. It was so bright.
But it's a problem because, particularly on trails where you've got two bikes coming at each other, that bright light can actually blind.
Oh, I never thought of that.
Oh, wow.
This thing
that bright. I'm just thinking of a flashlight, not a
headlight. Well, flashing one works better no matter what during the day.
Yeah.
I do flashing back and front on my helmet.
Yeah, and it's good, and you have to have it upwards visible.
Yeah.
But some of these lights that they've got now are so powerful that they really do blind you.
Yeah, wow. It's unbelievable how bright this thing was. Are those battery operated?
They're using rechargeable batteries.
Rechargeable, okay. But anything that increases visibility is good. Now, a lot of times, bikes have lights or reflectors on them. I wish there was a way, and I think about this quite a bit, I wish there was a way we could increase visibility of pedestrians more. Because I tell you, it's so hard to see pedestrians at night, especially at night, and most of the time they have dark clothing on and nothing illuminating, nothing reflecting, and it is just really, really hard to see pedestrians at night. And many times, especially in the winter after a big snow, nobody shovels their walks anymore, so they're out in the street, and it's just a very dangerous situation. Speaking of pedestrians, pedestrian crashes have been coming down. We had 10 fewer in 17, so we're headed in the right direction with pedestrian crashes, but bike and pedestrian crashes, when you look back over the years, tend to kind of spike up and down. So I hope that doesn't happen in 18. Pedestrian crashes always really spike in the fall, especially in October. And I looked at the data to see if maybe it was toward the end of the month, around Halloween, a lot of pedestrians. But unfortunately, I didn't see any. It just kind of spread out. I think what you have is a combination of nice weather, kids going back to school, and darkness. In October, the days are shorter, the mornings are dark, evenings are dark, especially mornings, because now we don't change the time until November, right. So you have a lot of dark mornings with people out.
Is there any breakdown of that by age? Pedestrians?
Oh, yeah, we do.
I have.
Does that go up higher in the fall when the kids are back to school, maybe?
Now you asked me if
you got the
oh, the breakdown of age, like per month.
Yeah.
I can easily do that. I'm
just wondering. That would correspond when kids are going back to school. That may be the reason.
Yeah. It's more. Yeah, you can see in September it just really goes up, and then that's when school usually starts. So, and don't forget, it's more than just grade school or high school. It's also colleges, and there's a lot of a lot of pedestrians around Akron and Kent after college starts. So, I could drill down deeper and see what kind of ages we have in those months.
I asked him to look at Halloween because I was just curious if you would actually see any kind of spike on that, or those couple days around it, but it really wasn't.
It was really more spread out.
That's when Akron was trick-or-treating. Because when I was trick-or-treating, that's what I thought of, is you see just so many more people out on the streets at night, poorly lit. And luckily, that's not
I'd like to touch on safety performance measures briefly. This is a new federal requirement. What we have to do is keep track of number of fatalities per 100 million vehicle miles traveled, number of serious injuries, and then serious injuries per 100 million vehicle miles traveled, and then number of non-motorized fatalities and serious injuries. So the way we do this is we average 5 years. We have a 5-year base number, and then as time goes on, we take 5 years as in average 5 years and compare that 5 years to the original 5 years. And we want to try to reduce, go down in every category. But unfortunately, We didn't fare too well with fatalities per vehicle miles traveled, but we have been making progress with injuries, serious injuries, and non-motorized fatalities and serious injuries. So we did good in 3 of the 5 categories. ODOT safety program is probably one of the best in the country. They provide over $100 million for projects, safety projects. Anybody or any community can apply for basically any highway. It doesn't have to be a federally functional highway, and the local match is 10%, which is a really good deal. I created these graphs just kind of more out of interest and out of anything specifically safety oriented, but what I did is I took the red bar is the age of the driver at fault in the 2015-17 crash report, and the blue bars are the age of licensed drivers in the AMATS area. And what I did is reduced them both to percentages because it would be hard to graph numbers because they would be so far apart. So as you can see, the 20 to 24 year old age category is the category with the most crashes, 18.5%, 18.5% of the crashes occur with drivers that age. That's why insurance is so high for younger drivers. You can see that there's definitely a lot more crashes at the younger ages. And then as time goes on, the percentages go down, and the number of licensed drivers goes up. So I just did that. I thought that was interesting, but the reason that younger people have to pay more for insurance is there's definitely a reason, because they are actually involved in more crashes. Yeah. And you know, the last thing I wanted to show was the, this is a graph. I don't want to try to confuse you, but the green bars and the red bars, the green bars are the percentage of licensed drivers that fall into age categories in Ohio. The red bar is number of licensed drivers in the U.S. by percentage, and the blue is the number of, it's the same as on the last graph, the blue bar is the number of licensed drivers in the AMATS area. And when I was just looking at data, I kind of, this kind of found this interesting, is with Ohio and the U.S., it kind of peaks down here in the like 35 to 44 age range. But in the AMATS area, the blue bars, it peaks out here between like 55 and 59, and then also the 60 to 64. So what this is showing is in our area, we have a lot more, I don't want to say older drivers, but we're just kind of a little bit ahead of the national and the state average as far as the age of most of our drivers. And, you know, as time goes on, I've heard safety experts call it the senior tsunami. You know, this wave here is just going to keep moving up into these other age categories. And, you know, that is something transportation engineers will have to, you know, think about and, you know, maybe design. I've noticed signs are bigger, street signs, at least here in Akron. The font is a lot bigger, and lighting and pavement markings. You know, these are all things to maybe consider. But hopefully by that time we'll have the self-driving cars, and everyone can just sit back and tell it where to go. But anyhow, that was just kind of a general interesting. So that kind of concludes my presentation. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to try to answer them.
Dave, that age bracket or curve really matches up the fact that the state of Ohio is aging.
Yeah.
You're just losing all of the younger
people. But the green is the state of Ohio.
Right, but
the red is the national average, and then the blue is our area. So it just kind of shows that you know, that most of the drivers in our area kind of fall in.
Which means that we don't have any younger people sticking around here. Either.
No, so they're fleeing to Columbus or somewhere else. Whether it's like,
well, we educate them, and then they move. Yeah, we're good at keep them till they get their degree, and then they move. We have a lot of colleges, you know, that are educating the young people, but we can't keep them, and
because they can't get a job to pay off the student loans.
Yeah, that, and just look outside.
Oh, there we go.
Oh, come on.
Here we go. Colorado's got the same thing.
Yeah, but the sun will be out tomorrow in Colorado. Yeah. And it'll be 60, and the sun will be out tomorrow in Colorado.
I realize these are from a year ago, but has there been any input yet from the three experiments in Akron right now? Middlebury, Akron U, and Kenmore?
Oh, you mean the road dives, or not road dives, but the...
Complete streets.
Has
there been any notice of any statistics coming from that?
It's a little too early yet.
Yeah.
Those were just done, and it's a little too early.
Nothing drastic then?
Nothing drastic, no. And when you do, especially Kenmore, when you do make a change like that, you always have to wait, I think, a month or so just to allow people to adjust to it. You might have like some things happening when it first opens, just because there might be some confusion, and then once people are used to it, then you can kind of start seeing how well it's working. The thing on the road diet on Exchange Street, that didn't pan out too well. It's gone already.
It's a whole other.
That's a whole other CIC. Yeah, actually, I have a road diet. Next time, I'll do a road diet presentation because I actually have one on my.
Yeah, one of the things we did see on the Kenmore Road Diet, and I don't, I didn't take this for, you can either make it a good thing or make it a bad thing, but it slowed traffic down about 2 miles an hour from before and after, from 30 to 28. Is that a big deal? One way you could argue it is, every mile per hour actually does reduce, according to statistics, reduce the chance of crashes, et cetera. But the other way you could say is only 2 miles an hour, what's the point? Or you could say, if it's not that big of a deal, then, who cares? Why not just have it for safety? But, Exchange and Do Well, the only safety data that we've looked at with road diets, Dave, has been, we looked at Talmadge near North High School. So they did a road diet there from Main to the interchange. That's three lanes. It used to be four, and that was done when ODOT repaved it last early spring, right? It was 2017 spring, I think. And then Copley Road, which was done even earlier than that. Talmadge, we saw really good results, substantially fewer crashes. But it was comparing 9 months of data to comparing the same 9 months a year apart. But it was real positive. It was a substantial drop, I think, by 25 or 30%. But on Copley didn't do as well. Copley crashes actually went up. And so one of the things we're looking at is trying to figure out, so there is a place to go from four lanes to three lanes, but there also might be a place where it doesn't make sense to do that, even if you have the room. And so we're trying to dig in a little bit deeper with that, too, to see, because that's where we have a little bit more data. Versus the Exchange Street.
Did you see the same kind of decrease in speeds, average speeds?
We didn't have our radar counters. So this was the one where we were able to do a pre and post at Kenmore. But we're going to try to do that more if there are more of those temporary, because that was the thing with Exchange is that, no one was thinking about it. I mean, I think they did some data collection, but really, we should have been out there, before and then after. And then by the time, because then we thought, maybe we can catch it during and then catch it after. But then they decided to rip it out, so.
Exchange Street was, I would not recommend a road diet over, with an ADT over 15,000. 15,000 is about as high as you want to go. And over there, they had ADTs over 20,000. And it was poorly laid out too. I don't think it was designed quite the way. It might have worked better if it was designed a little differently, but it was, in my opinion, just a little too much traffic.
But and what's interesting, and I think we're seeing this in Kent on Summit Street too. We're talking to Jim Bowling over there, and the college peak. I mean, you still have your work peak, but you also have mini peaks, almost hourly. Surges of traffic. And I think what we heard from some of the motoring public was that, and even some people that were really supportive would say, hey, I go to get Taco Bell on Fridays, and I'm not sure if it's going to take me 5 minutes or 15. And so when you're talking about that kind of delay, then that's, something wasn't working right there, unfortunately. So I agree with Dave. I think the design could have been better.
The problem with that is it just got bad publicity.
Right, and now it's
going to be tough to do anything.
Well, yeah, and it's a funded project for us in 2021, Dave, 2022?
I'm not sure.
That's kind of the question we're asking. So now, are you going back to five lanes, four lanes, three lanes? It sounds like the university was less phased by the traffic increase than the city was, so there still might be discussions of, hey, are there other ways? No matter what, they've got to make it better for bike and ped. No matter what they do, whether it's four lanes of traffic or three.
Whatever it is, don't call it a road diet.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that term, 5 years from now, we'll be like, remember when we called everything road diets? And the term will finally go away.
I was talking to someone from Cleveland that redid a street up there, and they put the bike lanes... they put the bike lanes in the middle on a raised median. Have you ever seen that?
No, I'm not so sure it's even completed.
But have you ever seen that concept anywhere?
Not in actual practice.
Oh.
But I've seen a lot of designs.
It just seems, that sounds...
It does, and I think most bicyclists think the same thing.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd like
that. I don't
want to
ride in the middle of the road.
Uh-uh.
So.
Right.
Yeah, I forget what street it was up there.
Well, they were talking about doing it on the, what they call the East Side Greenway.
Maybe.
But that was going through Shaker and...
Yeah, it sounded crazy to me. I mean, I don't know, I guess you take a street like Broad Boulevard... You just have grass in the middle anyhow, trees.
That might work.
Yeah, that possibly would, but...
The Broads, that's pretty wide.
Yeah.
That boulevard is pretty
wide. Yeah, but you could just take two lanes
right, yeah, out. Yeah.
Take
but
the,
just
take the trees and the grass out.
The problem you got with that is that you want to make a turn.
Yeah.
You get out there, the bicyclist wants to turn left.
Yeah.
He's got to get out into a cross street and then make the turn.
Yeah. That's, I don't know, I just...
Right, and if it's where a car wants to turn left, too, then the car turning left at your back shoulder.
Like that.
Yeah.
Well, but there's two lanes, and so if you're turning left on Broad, people can see that, they can go around the right lane. You don't stop traffic behind you.
No, you wouldn't stop traffic, but if you're in the center, and you want to turn left, and you're waiting, and there's a car that wants to turn left behind you, you kind of have to be, you have to be aware of that car while also being aware of the cars coming towards you. It just feels, I mean, there's always times when you're on a bike you have to have your head on a swivel anyway, but that would seem like it would be a case where you'd be, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd never seen it, never even heard of it, but someone told me about it, and it just sounded pretty crazy.
It has been done in other cities. Portland, I think, has got something.
Are there, talking to these crash intersections? So going up to Michigan, you can't turn left onto a highway. You got to turn right, and you go down a half a block or something, and then they have a very sharp little U-turn cut.
That's called an R cut.
A what?
And that's called an R cut.
R cut.
Yeah, there's different names.
I'm going. Well, is there anywhere talking about these intersections where you would force a driver to turn other way and then make a turn?
It's a relatively new thing, and. There's one being proposed at the intersection of, it's 585 and Eastern. It's going down toward Worcester.
Yeah.
585 and Eastern is proposing one of those. Proposing one.
And also, I mean, if you think about the Cleveland-Massillon project, where they're putting a roundabout, so you're going to be getting off at I-77, and if you want to go south on Cleveland-Massillon, you're going to turn right, go around the roundabout and come back down.
Really?
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's
no more left.
Left turns.
Don't ask me my opinion about that.
Yeah.
That affects me because my son lives in Hartville and I go that way all the time.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Hartville, he goes off at 619, which you're getting off at. That intersection.
No, you mean Cleveland-Massillon Road ends. And that's in Fairlawn.
Yeah, in Fairlawn.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
over by Montrose.
I'm thinking of Massillon.
No, this is...
Actually, there's some roundabouts being planned for
there's
area, too.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
You're going to be going through three of them, I think. This one is one where it's a half interchange. So you can only, if you're going north on 77, you can get off on Cleveland-Massillon. And you can get on going south, but you can't, you know, it's only a half interchange. And so one of the crash issues is it's cars get off and then try to turn left. Cleveland-Massillon's really busy in that left turn movement. And so this is going to eliminate that left turn movement. It's going to force everybody to the right. And then you can either continue north or you can go around the roundabout and go south.
But they put a traffic light in, and I think that traffic light helped considerably.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Aren't they doing something like that at 224 and 91? Going to
fast traffic up on the
7th. Yeah, that's
That's great.
That's a little bit different. That's just more like that's like a legal U-turn. You know, it's like you're not going to be able to turn left. You're going to have to go up, and they're having what they're calling a loon or something, where you're able to do a loop around the median and come back. But essentially the same idea: going north to go south.
Same concept.
Yeah, same concept. Not a roundabout, though. Summit County.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Dave. This is always one of our most well-regarded and best-done documents. Dave really does put a lot of time into it. And I think our members really like the work, and I think we get a lot of good info. I think it's helped us help the region get a lot of funding through ODOT as we identify these. So I appreciate that. So the next thing, Carrie is going to talk a little bit about our update to the 3P, our public participation plan, and Carrie, take it away.
Okay. Before I go any further, I want to apologize to the committee members for my tardiness tonight. I thought I left home in plenty of time, and it turned out to be a lot more of a slog than I thought it was, so I do apologize for that. Anyway, Attachment 5A is our draft public participation plan, or 3P. This is an update to the plan that we have approved back in 2015, and the most significant change to this version is the inclusion of Appendix E, which is our language assistance plan for limited English proficient populations, or more commonly called an LEP. We adopted this item, we made this change, I should say we created the LEP due to the urging of the Federal Highway Administration and Federal Transit Administration officials in the wake of our federal certification review in early 2017. At that time, some of you attended the meeting, and you may recall that they actually praised a lot of our public outreach strategies, such as our innovations, such as our bike and brainstorms and better block events. But they urge us to include an LEP, as many other NPOs are doing across the country. So when we began our update of the 3P in late July, we made creating an LEP a priority. So what we did to create this is we took into account four factors recommended by the U.S. Department of Transportation. And those four factors were that we should consider the number of LEP persons in the area eligible or likely to encounter an AMATS-funded program activity or service, the frequency that LEP persons may come into contact with such AMATS-funded activities, programs, or services, and the importance of those items to the LEP population within our area. We also had to consider the amount of resources and the cost to our agency when we tried to provide this language assistance to folks for whom English is not their primary spoken language. Along with those four considerations, we also looked at what other NPOs across the country were doing and their LEPs to cherry pick and things that we thought would work in our area. And we looked at various NPOs from large ones such as the Houston, Galveston Area Council to the smaller ones such as the Anchorage Metropolitan Area Transportation Study, or as I call it, the other AMATS. We believe that the LEP that we've crafted complies with Title VI of the 1964 Civil Rights Act and related Title VI regulations. We also believe that it complies with Executive Order 13166, which was issued by then-President Clinton, that states that agencies such as ours must provide meaningful access to its programs and services for LEP persons. In developing this LEP and in the update of the draft 3P overall, we looked at these with the intent of creating living documents. And what we mean by that is we're not going to be confined to the public outreach strategies defined within the pages of these items. We're going to be a little bit bolder and step up our game and try to look for other approaches and strategies that might work that have been met with success by other NPOs and councils of government across the nation, or other things that the CIC members may suggest, or other things that we may want to try. We want to try to get innovative again. And along with that, the staff, together with the CIC, I hope, will from time to time discuss the effectiveness of our public outreach efforts and ways to improve our 3P through just regular contact and dialogue. And along with these tactics that I'm describing here, we're going to be looking for training opportunities for the staff to help us better reach out to these folks in the LEP community. The draft 3P, we had it available for a 45-day public comment period that began October the 12th through November the 26th, and tonight's meeting is part of our efforts to get feedback regarding our update of the 3P. If you have any questions or concerns or anything that you'd like to discuss about this update, I'd be glad to try to answer them now if I can. I do have a couple of questions for the committee, though, as I get near the end of this thing, because I'd like to find out some things from you. Do you have any questions or concerns about the our draft 3P?
My picture's not in there.
I'd love to find one that would do you justice, Carl. I'd love to find one. Is it Mr. Helms?
Yeah. I thought it was discussed that they were going to try to do a different program than the quarterly that we're presently doing. That's not working out too well. I see you repeat that you're going to be quarterly next year. You just made that statement in here.
You mean the meetings?
Yeah.
The CIC meetings?
Yeah, what we did is we went back to, when we started this year, went back to not quarterly, but to mirroring our TAC schedule. So now we're going all of our CICs are on the same night as TAC, so we're having six of them. So we're going back to...
Well, it says you're doing four in here.
Does it? Yeah, so that needs to be changed, because we were doing four.
Well, I thought.
Yeah, we should have, that it's not more... It's a good catch, actually, because we went back to the idea that we're going to have the same number as meetings that we have.
So you're going to change page three here.
Is it page three?
Quarterly to... Page three, second paragraph from the bottom. CIC.
Yeah, so instead of meets quarterly, it should be probably six times a year is what we're really doing. Unfortunately, it's not like it's not the third February or third week of every second month or anything like that, but...
The other comment is, I went to a Middlebury meeting on Tuesday, and I think it was brought up there that a good way to get a good turnout is to have some food.
Well, it's funny,
Is it allowed here?
I told them.
I think it's allowed here.
On supper,
you know, part of the concern is, do you bring the food and then you have thrown it all out, but... the other thing we've talked internally about, and I think we've talked with you guys and just our strategies of trying to get more people, is just that, the public meeting is not what it used to be. And unless it's directly affecting, something that's immediate and, not in my backyard or I'm not comfortable with, And so when you're looking at a 20-year plan, we've talked about this for years, that it's hard. And I think... our last meeting, I'm not pointing fingers, but nobody came to our September CIC meeting. We were...
Without a speak.
We were here. I don't want to hear any excuses. You can fly back. in all honesty, it's hard to, it's hard for you guys to make it. I mean, I was thinking that was going to happen tonight just because of the weather. So some of the things we're looking at is just, are there better digital options? Are there other things? But... At the same time, I think even from the Fed perspective is that I don't think they've caught up with reality. So in a way, we're still sort of required to have this type of format, even though it doesn't appear to be the most effective way to get through.
Well, let me say that the bike and brainstorms were effective in the community where you published this.
Right.
And the word got out and people came in to do this. I mean, you get that community involvement there. Now, I'm going to pick on Cuyahoga Falls, my district there. We have two elementary schools, and they are the English as a second language magnet schools, if you will. And if you have moved into Cuyahoga Falls, Silver Lake, and English isn't your primary language, your child is assigned to that school to learn English. And they send stuff home to the parents, which could be Bhutanese on the top and an English on the bottom. That way, we hope the parents get the fact that there's going to be a PTA meeting.
Yeah.
And what a PTA meeting is, and Welcome to America, and sort of bring them into this so they meet the teachers and they can come to the school too. So 22 languages in Cuyahoga Falls. We've got to have 22 interpreters in both schools to make sure the kids are understanding a lesson and getting their homework home. I got a laser to take care of that.
Laser.
But we have set up sort of a communication program with the
non-English speaking
parents,
and to make sure they understand what the kid has to do and homework and school activities and what a school carnival is. I mean, you know, something American. So AMATS could approach school systems, because you send a notice home through the kids that AMATS is hosting a hog roast, all right, and we want to see the parents there to explain about, I don't know, who else do you want to bring? BMV? You don't need your driver's license. A simple set of 10 slides, driving in America, driving in Ohio. That's an avenue that's already being worked through the school system. I'm not saying you got to use it, but I'm saying that's how one organization has come to, we know you're out there, adults. You know, how can we reach you? Well, we can reach you through the kids. I'm done.
To expand on that, since you've been very successful with the Beat and Beats, why not do the same kind of thing where you approach the city or a group within a city and have some issues that you might be able to bring up that are relevant to that particular thing, and have one of the meetings or a couple of the meetings over there.
Well, and honestly, that's kind of what happened. I don't know if you guys were at when we did the Interbelt meeting. Was that last year, I think? It was hotly attended. This room was full of people. But again, because it was, and I think that's where the problem is that some of the things that we want public involvement on are things that people, it's just so dry. Yeah, so it's like, I think we know how to pack a room, but then are we really getting the feedback that we need, you know? So it's like, we heard a lot about the Interbelt, but quite honestly, we'd already paid for that product. I mean, you know, we'd already had our money in it, so, you know, that I think is the sort of the catch, too, is that, because I agree, I think it's always good when you can go, when we do a Connecting Communities program and we have a public meeting, we get decent turnout, because it's about a specific plan, it's about a specific image or rendering, and people can respond to it. For some of our other stuff, it's a little bit drier, so it's a challenge.
Kerry, do you have an email list that extends beyond just what your normal list is really notifying us?
Oh, yes.
There's something else getting out to a more wide area of the population.
We have a mailing list that consists of groups, and some of them are identified on there. One of them is called Asia Services, the National Urban League, some of those organizations and things, and we have regular mailings to them. May I ask the members something, a couple questions, if I may? How did all of you find out about tonight's meeting?
Email.
Well, I got the email and I read the Beacon Journal, and by golly,
did you see it?
Advertisement is in there. Much better than the one years ago, if you remember my comment about being.
Somebody's popular tonight.
It wasn't even as good as the advertisement for a funeral home. It was in a classified section. I mean, you could look at the funeral home ad and get more info than you could about an AMAT.
They're trying to make money.
Yeah.
Okay, now when you say the email, you mean the mailing campaigns that we have, the MailChimp campaigns?
It's got your name on it.
Okay.
You get
one for like Microsoft Outlook and the other one that's more kind of dressy?
I don't know, just a minute. No, they're both the same.
The same?
Well, the email thing that came out about the meeting tonight, and this package was attached. The other meetings that came out about, we're going to have a mic and brainstorm at da-da-da-da on this time, you know. I get those emails regular, so both ways.
Trying to gauge the effectiveness of them. Are all of you on our social media as well? Things like the Facebook and Twitter and YouTube?
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
Sorry. You're not Instagramming, Fred?
If I was all of you, I would consider subscribing to all those outlets and things and all. I think the
give us and Facebook your data.
That's right.
Well, then you never
well Facebook, yes, but there's only so many hours in a day, and I've got four other organizations I work with. You know, I can't read every email from AMATS, Facebook.
That's what we say internally when you give us stuff to read. You can't read every email, every piece of mail Bill gives us.
Well, got to show CIC involvement to the feds when they come here.
Do you guys get our regular, it's now semi-annual newsletter? Do you folks get that?
Online, I think. I've got it online.
You send one out, right?
You send the link out.
Yeah.
Do you visit our website pretty regularly?
Not unless I'm looking up your address to mail you something. Or
a document for what works and things.
Yeah. And I mean, and, you know, I think what Carrie's alluding to is that, yeah, it's just, it's, you know, you guys are committed. I mean, but even 3 or 4 years ago, we had a larger base. And I don't know if some of the, like, you know, remember Dustin Baker? I think he must have moved away or something. Or, you know, but he was used to be real involved. And then obviously Mike passed. And
we met up at Stowe, and I remember there was a guy there who was a retired history teacher.
Yeah.
But he eventually said, I'm out. I'm just getting to the point. You can't go.
So. Don Dietrich.
Yeah.
And then from Ken.
Oh.
Audrey.
Yeah.
Audrey. Yeah. And then Lisa Boswick. Wasn't it Boswick? She was for a while, and she and Mike would always get into it about bikes. And these were the old days in Silver Lake, as you know.
Do you like our meeting locations, or if we did like we toyed with the one time of having it at different locations throughout the AMATS area, would you prefer something like that just to keep it interesting, or does this work for everybody still?
Well, you could.
I don't really make any difference. I can travel. I don't really care.
Your major cities are Ravenna and Kent and Bordy.
Someplace else, and that brings more people. Go for it.
Well, in January, Daryl, you want to say what we've got going on in January?
In January, we're going to be at the in the city of Greene at the community hall conference room. Right there, right outside of the administration building, right across the parking lot, is the community hall. So we're going to be there. They're going to be talking about their Connecting Communities grant, their project that's going on. So that's we've kind of combined efforts with the city of Greene for them to do their presentation at one of our CIC meetings.
And what it's basically a bike connectivity plan, right? The Connecting Communities grant.
And again, the idea is for them to present their plan, draw in more people, but then also for us to do our agenda items that we have on our agenda
to bring to more people.
Right, right. So we might be able to, we're going to bore you for a few minutes.
Right.
We get into the exciting stuff.
You just
got
to make it entertaining. You just got to present it.
If you have it in green, we just go right up over there to handles. You know.
See, I thought I'd start out, well, how about that Nexus pipeline?
Let's go out and look at the Nexus pipeline.
Yeah. Well, you've got a Nexus for it.
Yeah.
Possibly it's a connection.
Yeah.
Talking about this, but let's say we had one at Ravenna. But how would you pitch your AMATS ad in the Record Courier? Is that Ravenna Record? We're going to discuss all these red dots that are on the Portage County map with crashes. Here are your high crashes. Here's where your citizens have died. You just say it's an accident, right? You got to sell the product. Here's where you die.
We had a similar conversation, the director and I, earlier this week, and I'm not going to go into that.
All right, but when you put out an ad, you got to set that hook. You got to get the customer interested to come in and see what you're selling.
You work for WIO,
then? Yeah, I was going to say. Well, after that crash on, just tell the story, after the crash on Goodyear Boulevard where the four people died, you know, we got this email from WOIO, Channel 19, and it was like, you know, is this a dangerous location? Have other people died here? Is any, you know, and it was just very much like, whoa, you know, and of course it's like not a danger. I mean, if you read anything about the accident,
in today's paper,
most likely. I mean, well, I shouldn't speculate, but middle of the night, you know, four people, most likely speeds involved.
Yep.
No traffic on the road. One car crash.
3 a.m.
Right. Yeah. You know, and so it's just like, no, that location's not even in here.
Right.
You know. And so then they got a hold of what they called an advanced copy of our safety report. And they had a 3-minute thing, and you know, it's like
these, you know, if you're a resident in these two counties, you've got to know, you know, this is where the danger's at.
Yeah.
This is what, you know, and it's like, but that's not really what, you know, that's not really what these reports are about. It's not meant to scare or frighten or say that you're going to die if you drive through here. It's more, you know,
higher probability.
Probably, yeah. Well, yes, I guess.
Well,
the station
I think
and
that's
the reporter.
Good input. People
well,
are being aware
but,
that
it
exists.
Just, but it's just like we don't want to be, you know, we don't want to be the ones being like, this is really dangerous. You know, it's well, let somebody else blow the horn for that. You know,
the reporter actually did do a very good job covering the crash report, though. Maybe
he gave us
one
a lot
or two
of
words that we wouldn't have used, but having been in his position, and believe me, I understand what he. He had to get the word out, and
right.
I think he did a very good job personally. But
it's just the different. It's a different way that you know we talk about things. We
right.
are we're research. We are you know yeah. calm,
you
cool,
get,
collected.
You guys get fun watching the concrete dry, but
yeah.
for the people who are driving on it, okay.
Right.
I mean, I've gone through and highlighted my Cuyahoga Falls ones, and
yeah.
I'm going to go see the mayor and say, "What are we doing all these dangerous sections of road here?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? You going to put more cops out? I mean, I can ask them that." Are you going to put more signs out? There's a couple places I'd like to see that stop sign with the flashing lights with the solar panel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, geez, you know, that's really going to get your attention, I hope. There's a few places that need that. Not all of them. I mean, most people understand what that
right.
octagon means, you know.
No, and I mean, and the one thing you're right about is that I think safety issues are... safety and orange barrels are very interesting to the public.
Especially when they have traffic cameras of bringing
these oh, yeah. dollars. Yeah, the issue about traffic
cameras. Man, I wish I'd come up with that idea. I mean, that private company is getting a
oh,
pretty nice
oh,
cut of $1.8 million.
Norton's getting a bunch with their little camera.
Yeah. Well, and the private company that provides all the equipment,
yeah.
they're getting
a cut.
It was like a 25% cut.
Oh, something like that.
Yeah. They don't even have to, you know, it's all Norton police. They're
yeah.
doing all the work.
Yeah. Norton made over $1 million, they said.
Yeah. Wow. So,
I
bet that'll end up in court. I wouldn't
yeah,
it
will. Fix the potholes. They want their money back, go dig the asphalt out.
Yeah. But
that concludes my presentation, unless you folks have anything else.
No, that's good feedback. We appreciate it.
Hire an advertising student out of the U of A for a semester project. Senior project, you know, how would you advertise this place to get people to come?
I don't know what you want to advertise.
May I have your attention,
they need,
please?
They need
the
projects,
library
real
will
life
close
projects.
In 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Please make final selections now.
UAP.
Thank you.
Or Kent, both of
them. The website is on the bottom of this, on these sheets.
Oh, yeah.
And if you go on the website, you know, I believe you'll see all the Twitters, all the tweets.
All the Twitters.
Twitters, tweets.
Yeah.
Warriors tweets.
all the tweets that come through.
Is the president there?
Yeah.
I don't know if we followed the lesson.
But yeah, all the tweets from AMET, so it's not like you have to be on Twitter to you know, to
mm-hmm.
see all the latest news that comes
yeah.
comes through. I know Carrie had to do a good job reading.
You got to update your you say it's to be announced. You've already announced it.
Well, we
the
put the agenda together. Oh. We hadn't yet confirmed.
Yeah.
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 So
yeah.
It is, and we'll update.
Print up for next week.
Yeah.
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 We'll send an announcement out about some things. We'll make sure that that's out there. Because technically, the 2019 meeting calendar hasn't been approved yet by the policy committee, so
oh, yeah.
until then it's not
yeah.
official. So
yeah.
that's true.
Good point. All right. Well, thank everybody for coming. If you have any additional questions or comments, but we appreciate it.